Next free throw is not good. Rebound comes down to Torrey Craig. Craig gets the ball off to Chris Paul. 2 seconds, 1 second. Suns win. And the Suns defeat Denver in 4 straight games. And the Suns will move on to the Western Conference Finals. Oh, brother.
Confidence is a dangerous feeling. Last week, you were sure the Nets are a title favorite super team. But this week, it's the Phoenix Suns shining through as injuries reign all over Brooklyn's parade. Today, Kirk Goldsberry maps out the weather system of these NBA playoffs, where chaos is the only sure thing in the forecast. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, June 14th. This is ESPN Daily. Kirk Goldsberry, it is 11 p.m. Eastern. You're staying up late with us. We appreciate it because we needed to make sense of the chaos that was Sunday in this insanely unpredictable NBA postseason.
Yeah, I mean, this was a crazy day.
Dr. Kirk Goldsberry is a cartographer, best-selling author, professor at the University of Texas, and former vice president of strategic research for the San Antonio Spurs.
And then we thought it was going to be crazy when the Kyrie Irving injury happened earlier, but then just when we thought it was going to be relatively crazy, it went double crazy with this insane outcome in the Nuggets game.
Yeah, I thought this evening was going to be like the nice countryside drive through today's episode, but we just watched the Suns sweep the Nuggets. That much we were bracing ourselves for, but game four of a sweep is supposed to be boring. That's not what we got. I mean, it's not every day, Kirk, that you see the league MVP get ejected in the middle of a game for decking somebody in the face.
Another bump. Oh, Joker's so mad right now at Pat Freyer that he didn't. And now Booker and Joker start getting into it in the corner. We're going into the front row of the stands.
Peyton, and meanwhile, is hurt. And if he's super hurt, you may see Joker get ejected.
The call on the floor has been determined to be a flagrant foul. Penalty 2 on Nikola Jokic. He's been ejected from the game.
Oh, my God.
How would you describe that particular sequence of events?
Yeah, more like most violent player. Am I right, Pablo? It was nuts. It was uncharacteristic. Nikola Jokic had a awesome season. He won the MVP rightfully, ran away from the pack. But unfortunately, we saw his season end with this lapse of reason. He got frustrated. His team was losing. He let his emotions get away from him. And he basically swiped through campaign's face. In my opinion, the refs made the right call there to give him a flagrant 2 and to eject him from the game. But it was a very disappointing moment in a really sad way for this great MVP season of Jokic's to end.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who felt great about that happening. Even Suns fans, I think, might have been furious in the way that I was furious, which is simply because that occurred in the middle of Chris Paul kind of achieving a higher level of consciousness, Kirk.
Motion house. Oh, another one. He is on automatic. Chris Paul is putting on a display for the ages.
He had been dominant in a way that was both familiar and staggering. And look, you make NBA maps of the floor itself. You understand how players have all their favorite spots on the floor. How would you describe his relationship with the right elbow at this point at age 36?
Yeah, well, Chris Paul, first of all, had a great series.
Guys, the play.
Oh, look at that play. Look at that play.
No.
He is a magician. Chris Paul, a sleight of hand. He is Houdini. My goodness.
I mean, he's the leader of this Ascendant Suns team at age 36. And He was making all the plays we associate with Chris Paul, but he's making very few mistakes. His assist to turnover ratio in this series was insane. But as a scorer, he saved the best for last. He saved the best for this game four. If, Pablo, the NBA floor were a Monopoly board and different players owned different places on that board, Chris Paul would own the right elbow, right next to free parking. He would be there. He has been the most prolific and the most efficient shooter in that exact area for years. So it was kind of poetic to see him play one of his best games of his illustrious career and have so many of these beautiful right elbow off the dribble shots that are just unstoppable, despite his relatively small stature. He made 8 mid-range shots in the second half as Phoenix clinched the series. We've seen it for years, but as you alluded to, if there's something crazy, he's 36. He's at the end of what many people just a few years ago considered to be one of the worst contracts in the whole NBA. Well,
yes.
Now he's just led the Suns past LeBron James in round one and the MVP in round two. This old point guard, he's not quite done yet, is he?
It's insane, Kirk, that I am somebody who's about to turn 36 this year, is someone who is roughly like 5'10 or so. And Chris Paul is doing this despite biologically being in any way similar to me. Like, I don't get it. I you're also an academic, Kirk. I want to put it in these terms. Like, he deserves something, like an honorific, some special certificate, a degree. Like, is there an endowed professorship we can give him at this point? Because he has 37 and is basically teaching the class, the master class, in how to play point guard in the modern NBA.
I think there's other sports we can take these lessons from. I think in boxing, they say somebody's the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. He seems to be that in our sport because he's so slight relative to the other great players. That's who Chris Paul is. He's an academic. He knows how to play basketball. He knows all the little tricks better than anybody else in the game, period. And that was on full display. Not just tonight, in this series. I think a lot of us picked the Suns to beat the Nuggets, but I don't think many of us picked them to sweep them like this.
And he also has that confidence, Kirk, that comes from having seen pretty much everything, that comes from being a guy who is older than everybody and has suffered more than anybody else at this point, because I want to bring up 2 points here. One, the assist to turnover ratio that you mentioned, I did this longhand, 59-8. In this 6-game win streak, which is, I mean, that's interplanetary. But right. Then the second data point on Chris Paul, of course, is that he has never made an NBA Finals. And so when you evaluate him in retrospect, as NBA fans will do, I wonder, like, how are we going to think of him? Because his legacy, and legacy is thrown around all the time, but in this particular case, it feels incredibly appropriate. It feels like that's at stake right now.
Yeah, at least for that rings counting group of people that need their superstar players in whatever sport to win it all, to be sort of deemed a great player. But yeah, I feel like his legacy, it's at least part of it is up for on trial right now. If they get over the Western Conference Finals and into the finals, yes, that will change the conversation about Chris Paul. And certainly, Pablo, if Chris Paul comes out of this with a championship at age 36, which is plausible in a way that I didn't think it was 2 weeks ago.
Same.
If Chris Paul ends up with a championship, oh my gosh, this is like, I guess, I don't know, like a late era championship for John Elway. That's the best example I would have across sports.
The guy who is the other superstar, and maybe that's debatable still because he's so young, Devin Booker is under 25 years old still, but the other guy at least playing like a superstar, a genuine one, is Devin Booker, who had 34 points in this game. And LeBron had called him, Kirk, the most underrated and disrespected player in the NBA. And here they are now in the Western Conference Finals, one step away from taking Phoenix back to the finals for the first time since 1993. When you watch Devin Booker play and the role that he has on this team, how would you describe that? How good is he?
He's awesome. I mean, he's still a kid, too. He's 24 years old, but he's already finishing his 6th season in the league. He has a lot of experience. But this organization in Phoenix, he's had so many different head coaches. There's been no stability around him, but he still managed to develop into one of the best scorers in the world. And as a result of his sort of being sort of struggling in bad Phoenix environments until this year, many, many NBA fans have never watched him play on a big stage because he simply hasn't been in the postseason ever before. But as a result, here he is. It's his introduction. He's a natural-born scorer. He's one of the few scorers in the league that can score efficiently from every level, whether it's at the rim, in the mid-range, from behind the three-point line. What I like about him the best, remember, when they were playing the Lakers in round one, Chris Paul was really hurt.
Yes, his shoulder.
And Devin Booker needed to step up, and he did. He's already showed up in these playoffs, and he's such a young player. The future's bright in Phoenix if he stays there.
So let's talk about the present for the Phoenix Suns right now, because I just want to ask this very bluntly. Are they the best team left in this postseason as we stand here today, late at night on June 13th, Kirk? Because I look at their roster and how it's constructed from DeAndre Ayton, who is the big man who can move, who can run rim to rim, to this collection of wing players that seemingly all can shoot threes and play defense. I struggle to identify a weakness.
No, they're like a quintessential NBA team. They have like the five traditional positions locked up. They have a great coach, a great bench. But DeAndre Ayton, I'm glad you brought him up. He enabled Monty Williams, who should have won Coach of the Year, in my opinion, to single cover Jokic in this series, which took away a lot of his playmaking abilities because, you know, Portland's double teaming him. And then Jokic just makes the right play because he's so gifted as a playmaker. Ayton really gave the Suns a huge gift in this series on defense by manning up against the best center in the league and holding his own against the MVP, which really set the tone. But you're exactly right. This is a very complete basketball team. They're a two-way team. They're very good on offense and they're very good on defense. We already mentioned Chris Paul and Devin Booker. DeAndre Ayton's pretty good big. And then Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder are great wings. Mikal Bridges is one of my favorite young sort of 3-and-D guys, which is another huge important role in the modern NBA. He can shoot, he can hit floaters, and he's a good defender. He can rebound. So they can do it all. To answer your big question, and I'm glad you sort of gave me the caveat, because things change very fast in these playoffs. Right now, as we sit here on the night of June 13th, I think they are the best team standing.
All right, Kirk, after the break, I want to move from the nice sleep that Suns fans are going to get tonight to the utter sleeplessness in Brooklyn.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Kirk, I want to be fully transparent with you because this is an episode that I saw as of last week when we were trying to schedule out this week. I saw this as a tribute to the Brooklyn Nets. It looked like they were going to sweep the Milwaukee Bucks. It looked like they were the team that had great clarity atop the ecosystem of the NBA playoffs. But again, here we are, and James Harden is gone with hamstring tightness. Kyrie Irving has a rolled ankle, which knocks him out of today's game 4.
Timeout called by Steve Nash, and it appears to be the right ankle of Kyrie Irving that's caused Brooklyn to stop play here and attend to him.
And so the team that had just won game 2 by 39 points, they end up on the receiving end of a Milwaukee crowd that is chanting Bucks in 6. as the Bucks win by 11, and that feels plausible suddenly. So how much has changed in this series?
Yeah, in a word, Pablo, everything has changed. I mean, you're exactly right. It looked like they were going to steamroll their way through this series. Milwaukee won a really ugly game three. And then game four started. It was even. And then at the end of the second quarter, Kyrie Irving got hurt. And that, I think, is the big story in this series, potentially. I think Brooklyn could have won this series with two of their big three. I'm not sure if they can win it with one of the big three.
Yeah, game three, Kirk, the end of that game, a common takeaway was Brooklyn Nets fans should actually feel even more confident now, even though they just lost that game, because it felt like the Bucks sort of, you ever play Mario Kart and you get hit with like a red shell right at the finish line, and so you sort of spin backwards into a victory? That's what the Bucks felt like after game three. But now it seems pretty clear that there's a talent disparity in a direction that none of us anticipated, in that the Milwaukee Bucks suddenly are more talented than the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, I think there's a few big themes in these playoffs. Number one, I think we're seeing new faces like DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker, as we alluded to earlier. But another big theme, unfortunately, is injuries. We're seeing it with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. We saw it with James Harden. The list goes on, and it goes on and on to Kyrie Irving. When this series started, and remember, James Harden played about the first 45 seconds of it, but before he got hurt, Brooklyn had three of the best four players in this series, three superstars, James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. Harden got hurt in game one. Kyrie gets hurt here in game four. If they can't play, Milwaukee's big three are now representative of three of the best four players in this series. So Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jrue Holiday, and Chris Middleton join Kevin Durant now in that group of best four players. So the whole power balance in this series has switched from Brooklyn superstars to Milwaukee's if, and that's a big if Kyrie or Harden isn't able to go in games five and six.
But let's talk about how Giannis has been looking in this series, because it's been bizarre, Kirk. Even still, I mean, the free throw psychology is its own can of worms, where he can't pull the trigger in under 10 seconds sometimes, which feels, it's weird that we're in the postseason and that's still happening. But even on top of that, in these two straight wins, Giannis is still insisting on shooting threes, even though he is truly terrible at it. I mean, what do you see when you watch Giannis right now, and what would you like him to do differently?
Well, the last time, remind me to talk to you about the 10-second rule, because I have a very good take on that. But the last time I was on this podcast, we talked about Russell Westbrook,
yes,
who is also an MVP, who also has a maddening shot selection. And for whatever reason, Giannis has escaped the same sort of critique that Russell Westbrook has endured for years now, but no more. From me, at least. Giannis, you need to stop shooting these threes. He's a terrible jump shooter. And often there's this opportunity cost associated with those jump shots. It's one less driving rim attack for Giannis as well. So, look, Giannis is at his best when he's getting to the rim. They're going to beat the Nets if he can continue to do what he did today. If he can punish this small team without a traditional rim protector and score a lot of points in the paint. So when he shoots threes, Brooklyn fans rejoice. And that's not good if you're rooting for the Bucks. He was really good in game four, but I think a lot of us are starting to think that if he leaned into those rim attacks more and his jumpers less, he could reach another gear, and so could this team.
Yeah, I watch Giannis as a Sixers apologist, Kirk, and I just imagine Ben Simmons smiling to himself, because Ben Simmons gets yelled at all the time for not shooting, and Giannis is the case study in favor of Ben Simmons' worldview.
Yeah, no, that's right. There's three of these guys in the world now. There's Simmons, there's Antetokounmpo, and there's Westbrook, and they all get like weird, right, different kinds of criticism.
That's right. No, but you're right.
We should probably be more consistent with that across those three guys. but that's a good article idea. The other thing with this 10-second clock, can I get to this?
Yeah, no, tell me about your take, because I am intrigued by the psychology of
all of this. Okay, it's not about psychology. It's about, imagine a world where the 24-second clock that we're all familiar with in the NBA was just obscured from the players, right? You just didn't know where in the 24 seconds you were. That would change the sort of vibe around NBA, right? Of course, that's not there. We have the thing. It's a big red set of numbers above the backboard on both ends of the court, right? But when Giannis has this 10-second rule, he doesn't know how many seconds he has left, you know? Why don't we use the shot clock? Hey, we have a thing called the shot clock. Set it to 10, count it down, and so he knows where he is in the sequence. It just drives me crazy that we have this digital apparatus ready to use for this exact thing, and he's got to do it in his head for these? Come on.
You mentioned Kevin Durant before, and the internet, Kirk, they made KD, as they often do, as we often do, let's be honest, the protagonist of today's game. But it seems like the Bucks have done things to ratchet up the difficulty level for KD specifically, and that ratchet seems to be named PJ Tucker. So what are you seeing in that specific matchup?
Well, we talked about how these new additions to the Milwaukee roster have changed the vibe in Milwaukee. And PJ Tucker is a huge part of that. And as a professor at the University of Texas, I feel like I'm uniquely qualified to address this, Pablo, because both Kevin Durant and PJ Tucker are Longhorns, and both have had long NBA careers. But Tucker specifically has built a reputation as one of the most aggressive, most competitive defenders in the league for years. He's tough as nails, and he looks at this kind of an assignment against Kevin Durant in a playoff series, and he gets excited, and he wants to prove to the world that he's a problem. And look, nobody is going to stop Kevin Durant, but Tucker is doing a good job containing him and frustrating him. We've seen it in both games, 3 and 4. Kevin's losing his temper. You can see it out there, and a lot of that has to do with sort of the annoying and effective aggressive defense that PJ Tucker has been able to play.
So Kevin Durant is in need of help, Kirk. That's where we are right now. Again, late on a Sunday night, we need to get Kevin Durant help is what every Brooklyn Nets fan is thinking. So what does the forecast for Kyrie and Harden look like as of right now? And if they can't play, who is going to play point guard?
Yeah, stay tuned. Nothing is for certain at this point. Time is not on their side. They're scheduled to play again on Tuesday, Thursday, and if Game 7 happens on Saturday. So there's travel days and very little off time to recover. According to Steve Nash, Harden has resumed some on-court work, but that doesn't seem like he's had much of any full-court work yet, let alone anything close to a playoff intensity. As for Irving, the most recent reporting suggests more tests are needed to fully diagnose his ankle injury. He was seen walking out of the Milwaukee arena with a boot and crutches. That's not a great sign. And if they can't go, who plays point guard? Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant brought the ball up for 33 possessions, tied for his most in a game this season in Game 4. And that was tied with how many times he did it in Game 3. Kevin Durant is their major on-ball player in a world where Kyrie and James are not able to play.
So, Kirk, at the very end here, I just want to inquire about your psychology, because you're somebody who needs to analyze games, make predictions. You're called into service to be confident about basketball analysis. What has this postseason so far felt like to you?
It's been crazy. And it's been fun. I mean, for me, it's been fun to see the fans back in the buildings. I think that's been my number one thing. I forgot how much fun those playoff crowds can be, and sometimes a little dangerous, but mostly fun. And I think the big lesson so far is that you got to trust the regular season a little bit. I mean, at least in the Western Conference, people were very quick to dismiss the Utah Jazz and the Phoenix Suns as if they weren't the best two teams all year long. And here they are. You know, both of them could very easily be in the Western Conference Finals as the 1 and 2 seed. And in the Eastern Conference, the Philadelphia 76ers are still alive, and the Bucks and the Nets, top three teams. So I think, you know, the regular season still does portend a little bit what we're going to see in the postseason. And another sort of bad lesson, we talked about this earlier, is that injuries are always going to change the course of some of these series. For me, I think we're going to set a record for how many All-Stars miss playoff action this season with Kyrie's injury, unfortunately. So I don't know if that has something to do with our shortened offseason, Pablo. You know, remember the NBA had a really short offseason after the bubble in our resumption. But whatever the cause is, that's a big thing, too.
Kirk Goldsberry, the NBA's premier map maker, thank you for showing us the way through this first round and a half of the playoffs.
My pleasure, Pablo. Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up, we call up the biggest Nets fan west of the Mississippi.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Mina, I wanted to have you on mostly to make fun of you, I have to admit, because you are the preeminent Nets super fan in sports media.
I mean, we could talk about their performance since Harden joined the team, or we could talk about how great they've been since I joined the team Brooklyn Nets super fan. As of a week and a half ago, they've gone 4-0, and does it have to do with me becoming a fan? Who is to say?
But then I realized I need to explain how it is you became the preeminent Nets fan in sports media in the first place. So we checked the Twitter receipts on this. So it is 4 months to the day. Mm. You joined this bandwagon on February 13th, 2021. So before we get into how you're feeling today and the poking and the prodding on that, how would you just explain the origin story of how it is that we got here?
Well, Pablo, I was watching basketball, regular season basketball, obviously, and I was watching with great interest because that was the first time that James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving were all playing together. It was against the Warriors, so the Nets' big three was finally in action, and just as a basketball fan, I wanted to watch, and then I noticed how angry people on Twitter were about the existence of the big three and all things Nets, and I thought it would be funny to decide in that moment to become a super fan as a sort of heel turn. By the way, that date is notable because I have been a Nets super fan longer than Mike James, who may have to start for the Nets, has been on the Nets. Sorry, I just had to get that out.
Here we go. Mina, we are at the point where you're like the first person to find undervalued real estate in Brooklyn. Like, the fact that you were on the Jumbotron at Barclays Center in May as part of Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, which is deserved, like, on the merits, but just to see your face on the Jumbotron, I was both so wildly jealous and also sort of, like, wondering what reality is anymore.
Yeah, I know, especially since you have, I don't want to say bandwagon, but you became a Sixers process truther, I guess, years ago at this point. And I don't think you've been on the Jumbotron, to the best of my knowledge.
If bandwagoning involves paying in blood for years, then yes, I did bandwagon. And you're right, though. I do want Daryl Morey to know that that is a fact that you just gave. I have not been so celebrated. But all of which is to say that you aligned with the formation of this big three, and we are talking today when you are aligned with a big one. So 2-2, tied with the Bucks, Kyrie injured, James Harden out. What is your emotional state like right now as this Nets super fan?
Not great, Pablo. Not great. it's like when you don't know how much you really care for someone until they break up with you or they're gone or you're separated. Mm. That's kind of how I feel with the Nets. Like, I became a super fan in jest, but these are real feelings that I'm having, feelings of agony. And of course, it's never good for basketball when superstars of James Harden and Kyrie Irving's caliber are not playing in the playoffs. And that's true of any team, any star, but especially not good for the Brooklyn Nets because they are, you know, a rather top heavy roster. And it's a top heavy roster that, despite the origin story, in which I watched the big three, has really played very little basketball with all three of those stars together.
I mean, it is funny to me, though. Like, this all started off as kind of a bit, but now, like, and this is, I think, the true test of anyone's fandom, your shame, your humiliation on the internet is on the line every single game.
Not sure I agree with that. But yeah, I would argue that it's less humiliating at this point if they lose because there's an obvious reason, right? Which is the injuries. Whereas if the Nets big three had all played together and they had still lost, and this is a team that very much in its healthy state should win it all, I think that would have been more humiliating, not just for me, but for actual longtime Nets fans and for the franchise. At this point, goodness, I mean, they're so banged up. I'm not making excuses. I feel this way about any team that loses a star. I felt this way about the Lakers when Anthony Davis was clearly hurt. You know, it is a league where you do need more than one star typically to win. They certainly face an uphill battle, my beloved Brooklyn Nets.
So your beloved Seattle Seahawks, your beloved Seattle Mariners, I mean, those are the teams that you've lived and often died with for decades now. I guess as you sort of survey the landscape of your personal fandom, are you concerned that you have now cursed the Brooklyn Nets?
Well, Pablo, unless I am directly responsible for Giannis's gigantic foot getting in the way of Kyrie Irving's normal-sized foot hitting the ground, I'm not blaming Giannis. I'm just saying his foot's very large and it was very much in the way. I do not take responsibility for this injury. Look, we don't know what Kyrie's status is at the moment, but and I doubt they're going to rush Harden back. But I'll say this. Kevin Durant, I think, is one of the, you know, the best players in the world and a player who has the talent, the rare gifts, I think, to put this team on his back. It's not something that happened in this game. Of course, it wasn't something that they expected. But I imagine going into game five, he will be playing with a sense of mission, something to prove, if you will. And I have faith in his talents.
And I gotta say, I am rooting for the Nets at this point.
Wow, really?
I'm rooting for them. And I think you know why.
Because you think they're going to be easier for the Sixers to beat?
Oh my God, it's going to be amazing.
I don't think.
It's going to. I can see myself on that Jumbotron already.
It's not
going
to happen.
Mina Kimes, the preeminent Nets fan in the stupid business we work in. Thank you for bearing your soul.
Nets in seven.
Wow. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.